Good evening, lovelies. Welcome to another episode of Coffee, Candy, and Creatives. Tonight's creative is interior designer Jonathan Rackman of Jonathan Rackman Design. Jonathan decorates some of the biggest and most luxurious homes you could imagine, and he took the time to sit down with little old me. Tonight, we're talking about his new book, The Garlic Peanut Story, a touching memoir written from his heart in the form of letters to his beloved sister and her children after her tragic passing from cancer. The love he has for his sister, even after all these years, is evident in every word he utters. There's sadness, but also joy as he reminisces about the beautiful Huehue. Jonathan was also kind enough to give me and my special call-in guest tips on designing a stunning yet functional workspace. He is truly one of the kindest people ever. So grab a cup of coffee or your favorite beverage, cuddle up with your host pup, and enjoy the show. Tonight's episode is brought to you by ThoroClean. This cleaning company has been servicing the Central Florida area for more than 30 years. Their attention to detail and their refusal to ever leave a job with less than perfect results makes them my personal go-to for all of my carpet, tile, and furniture cleaning needs. ThoroClean provides these cleaning services as well as restoration services and a proven sanitizing process that helps to combat the spread of illnesses, including COVID-19. So for all of your residential and commercial carpet, tile, and furniture cleaning needs, as well as emergency services, contact ThoroClean at 321-729-8198.
I was thinking this was the way to go, and you put up your puppet show. I say cheers to life. No, I'll be no good man.
Just leave me alone. I'm running the show.
Guys, I'm here with Jonathan. He is an interior designer. He's also now an author. His book, The Garlic Peanut Story, is available at thegarlicpeanutstory.com, where 100% of the profits go to children in need and orphans, also mom and pop businesses that have been adversely affected, all in Indonesia. So go to the website, check it out. Jonathan, how are you?
I'm well, thanks. And thank you so much for having me. I'm honored.
It's amazing to have you here. And this story, I love how it's written. It's written in the form of letters to your sister and to your niece and nephew, correct?
Correct. It's in the form of letter to my sister's children, my nephew, Zab, and my niece, Grace.
Oh, wow. And did you find it an easier way of writing that way?
You know, I didn't plan to write this book. I wrote in the beginning, I literally wrote letters to, at the time, they were only 4 and 6. When they lost their mom, my dear sister, by the way, it's pronounced Wewe. It's Wewe, and it's spelled W-E-W-E.
So say
it's
like it again, Wewe.
It's a Wewe. Wewe.
Wewe.
Yeah, very all good. Right. Excellent.
Wonderful.
Not Wee Wee. Some people say it's Wee Wee. I was like, no, yeah. That's a different. So I wrote the letters literally not intending to write a book, simply because it was my way, I guess, one way of grieving, but grieving as well as I wanted them to remember about their mom because they're so young. And I knew then at some point the memory of their mother will fade, and I want to keep that memory for them from my point of view. As I was writing, and by the way, it took me the first about 13 years to write the first 3 chapters.
Wow.
But during the pandemic, that 6 months, I completed the rest of the book. Like another, I can't even remember how many chapters. I gotta look this up. There are 13 chapters. So the rest, the 10 chapters, I bang it in 6 months.
Thank you.
So as I was writing, it became very clear to me that there's a lot more than the story about my sister and myself. I wanted to share a story of my childhood with her and her unconditional love. I hope it will help other people, children or adults alike, that went through my horrendous, terrible childhood that I had. and a story of survival as well as love and forgiveness.
Wow. And it's so funny. Excuse me. It's funny, though, the perspective that you bring, because as a child, don't you see your parents as parents, but other people see them as people, you know? So bringing your perspective as a brother and as a seeing her as a person, it opens their eyes a little bit to things that they might not have noticed. Just, and you said they were very young when she passed.
They were 4 and 6.
Wow. Yeah. You're absolutely right. The memories fade.
Yeah.
What a and treasure just, you have given
just
them.
Recently. Oh, they are now 18, 19, and maybe 20, 21, about that age. And of course, just recently, when we discussed about that, the book had been published and all that stuff. And the younger one, Zeph, the boy, now 18 or 19, he said that, I asked him, what do you remember about your mom? And literally, he said, not much, not wow. much. And that just, I try not to be so emotional for him. But that just broke my heart. Wow. And I'm hoping to deliver this to Indonesia myself in about 2 weeks or 3 weeks. The first two books that arrive and I sign specifically for them, I'm in communication with Zeph. Grace has withdrawn. And for the longest time, we didn't have any contact, partly because of, I believe, because of their father did not allow them to be in touch with our side of the family, as well as especially my husband and I, for obvious reasons. I mean, culturally and religiously, there's a lot of tension, obviously, and a lot of ignorance and misunderstanding. So, but I will continue to love them. But I'm hopeful Zeph and I, we actually keep in touch with WhatsApp, you
right,
know, so we text and we chat. Yeah.
That is something the culture, I guess I never realized that Indonesia just seems very tropical, very relaxed. But as you say, there's tolerance and judgment, and growing up for you, that had to be, as you address, very difficult, very difficult. And I'm not sure, what is the religion? There one, is there many, the beliefs?
Indonesia. So as far as I know, of course, I left when I was so young, but Indonesia, just so everybody, your listeners have context, Indonesia is the fourth most populated country in the world after the U.S. It goes China, India, the U.S., and Indonesia. There are almost 18,000 islands, and only about 6,000 or 7,000 are inhabited. But out of those islands, there are about 500 languages, not dialects, but languages. Religion. As if you live in Indonesia, you must declare that you have a religion. In your ID, it has to be spelled out.
Wow.
And Indonesia is the largest Muslim country in the world because of the population. 90% of Indonesians are Muslim. My family are Christian, and within the Christianity, you have to declare you're Catholic or you're Protestant. So they're Muslim, Christian, Buddhism, Hindu, and there is one more religion, I can't remember what it's called, but it's not, you cannot be an atheist in Indonesia, I believe. You don't have that option.
Wow, you have to declare it.
Yeah. Yes, you do. Besides, you know, everybody always asks what your religion is and how much do you weigh?
What does that have to do?
Right. But no, it's just culturally, it's an interesting, it's such a complex, rich culture, completely different. But speaking of religion in my family, even within my family, so my dad and mom are very practicing a Protestant, Presbyterian, Methodist. My brother-in-law, who clearly cut us off, he subscribes to, I'm not sure if it's Seventh Adventist, something like that, he doesn't believe in Western medicine, which I also discuss in that book, because the pain that my sister went through as she was going through cancer. Till these days, we just celebrated the anniversary of her 15 years of her passing. Every time I think how much suffering she had physically as a result of no relief from morphines or any such a painkiller, it still upsets me to no end. And there are days I just you know, that's a tough one on me. For whatever reason, he forbade his kids to be in touch with us. But now that they're adults, I made the move to contact them.
Right, yeah. Because it is now their decision.
Right. And, you know, this is something I discussed with my husband. Of course, he's a psychologist. The only one who can handle me. Grace, the daughter, I would imagine her loyalty is to her father, which is fine, you know, but at some point I'm hoping this book is not about us versus them or him versus us. This book is truly a book of love, survival, and forgiveness. Mm-hmm. And I hope someday she will read it and understand the point and my intention, not just for them, but also what I want people to learn about my sister, their mom, and how hopefully it would help, even if it helps one person in the world or other people to hang on to life, to hang on to love and to forgive. Why not?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's amazing to me, 15 years of not seeing or having niece and nephew, the children of your sister, because of your orientation is ridiculous. I mean, honestly, if you didn't have that orientation, we wouldn't even be having this conversation because of his religious
beliefs. Right. But also, besides the sexual orientation, there's already a tension between my father and my brother-in-law. They each believe their Christianity is better than the other.
Mm-hmm.
So that itself has already presented. This is why, in a lot of ways, I actually give up my formal religion. Mm-hmm. I stopped subscribing to any religion, formal religion, although, you know, I'm glad my parents gave me the foundation of Christianity, but now I'm able to select as an adult what it is that I do believe, what I don't. But, you know, I always say my religion is love, truly is. I always say, what would Wewet do? Not what would Jesus do, but what would my sister do? Because she was such a loving, she was so small and petite. Mm-hmm. She has the biggest, biggest heart. And I have never seen her angry once in my life. I have never seen her said of unkind things about anyone. I literally, maybe I over worship her for obvious reason, but I truly I try to speak truth in the as much as I can in real life or in the book. But she had so much love for the world and for all of us, that, you know, each of us that has been touched by her in our life is always grateful. And she was a blessing. She truly was an angel on earth for me.
Right. And no, I get that sometimes we look back on memories with our loved ones or people that have passed, and we want to romanticize it, or we want to look at it through a foggy glass to only remember the good things. Some people are truly, truly good people, though.
I believe that. I really, and I don't know if you've read the book or not, but if you have, that was part of my fear in the beginning. And I discussed that in the first chapter. I had so much anxiety of writing about her because I was so afraid I didn't do her any justice in describing her as human while she was alive.
Mm-hmm.
And what an amazing, even just talking about her, of course, I have so much love about her, but I know at some point this tear ducts are just gonna it's just gonna go bleh, every time I talk about this book.
The thing is, like, you feel like you don't have the words, you don't have the right words or the perfect words. It's like, my sister was the most beautiful. Nope, not beautiful. She was the most illuminated. Nope, that's not it. Because what you have and what you have, sometimes you can't get it out on the paper. And you said it took you 13 years to do
first three chapters. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not a professional author or writer. I took maybe one or two writing classes in college. One of them is English as a second language class. Mm-hmm. So for me, I guess people call it the writer's block. For me, it wasn't. It was truly, I was so scared of not being able to describe her fully the way she deserved it. But as well as, of course, it was such an emotional time. And, you know, life comes with excuses and baggages. And I was like, it's the work, the career, the supporting the family. And, you know, my husband and I, we also have fairy godchildren from like 7 or 8 different countries. So we didn't adopt them formally, but we embrace and love them as our own. So there are a lot of excuses I made. But during the pandemic, guess what? No more excuses. Mm-hmm. I just sat down on my dining table becomes my writer's desk and just went for it. Just went for it. And at some point, I couldn't stop writing. There are times that I had to be dragged out. Like, we need to take a walk. We need to eat dinner. I just couldn't stop.
That's what you needed to do. Your muse or your inspiration knew we're gonna lock him in this chair and he's gonna get it out.
Yeah.
And you feel like 10 pounds, 30 pounds lighter when
it was also her 60th birthday last year.
Oh.
And for me, I wanted to give her the gift.
Right.
So I finished the writing. Our birthday is exactly 6 months apart. Is that right? Or 7 months? 7 months apart. My publisher and my editor, you know, she's a Kiwi who lives in Bali, who was stranded back in New Zealand as he was doing this. And I was insisting, I pushed her, like, we've got to be done with editing because it has to go to print. I wanna publish this on my birthday. I turned 50 last year, and it was a dedication for her on her 60th. I was supposed to be with 50 people in the island of Sumatra for my birthday, from like 15, 16 different countries, but I had to cancel that trip because of the pandemic. But for me, just the symbolism of it and the act of, making the offering for my sister was so important. So I wanted to finish that. Sorry.
No, it's like you had this invisible deadline that your heart needed this to be done on.
Yeah, right? It was so important because my husband baked a cake. For us to celebrate, and homemade, and we just, the two of us, we lit some candles, and the candle that I discussed in the book that I got when she passed away, and we had her picture by on the dining table, and see that on the book. Yeah, but anyway,
so pretty.
Yeah.
So I'm so sorry.
No. This is just I'm a crier to start with. any movies that I'm a sentimental wreck. I'm just an emotional I call myself, I just turned 50, so I said I'm menopausal. I'm menopausal.
You're menopausal. You're in your feelings a little bit.
My sister, every time she was the most important person in my life. She, by the time I was born, she was already 10, so she was like my second mom. And I don't know if I should tell you there's so much in this book. I mean, I will not spill the beans too much, but my sister was adopted. She was the daughter of our chauffeur. But for me, by the time I was born, she was already part of the family, and she's just my sister, period. But I think it's even more, I think the whole thing became, the fact that she was adopted and how good she was with all of us, and especially to me as her youngest brother, has such a profound impact, even more so, I think, compared to my biological siblings. Mm-hmm. And I think that adds to the complexity of our stories. And now my husband and I, we, although we don't adopt them formally, we collect fairy godchildren that we love as our own. And that's why children were so important to my sister. And that's why I want to continue as long as I live. Anything that I can do for kids who need the love or support, be it just listening to them or taking them in or supporting them financially, whatever we can do, I'd love to do that.
Right. By paying for school or buying shoes, things like
that. Yeah.
Like we said in the beginning, 100% of the profits, if the listeners buy the book from your website, thegarlicpeanutstory.com, 100% of the profits go to the kids.
Yes.
100%. Yeah. Oh, and I forgot to mention, you will get a signed copy of the book, signed by Jonathan.
Yes. Which... And a more beautiful flaps versus where if you order it from other companies. Yes.
Right. You get, oh, Danny's here. You get the fancy flap if you order it from the website. Danny, this is Jonathan.
Hi.
Hi, Danny.
Nice to meet you, Jonathan. How are you?
Nice to meet you.
Excuse my tardiness.
No. You're happy that you can join us.
I'm happy to be here.
So, yes, I was telling Jonathan we were having a listener join us so we can talk about the work from home thing that we've talked about previously on the show. We're just finishing up. We were talking about his book. It's called The Garlic Peanut Story. It's your memoir via a letter at his sister's daughter and son. His sister passed away 15 years ago, Jonathan?
Yeah, 15 years ago. And they were only
They were little guys. They were 4 and 6. So this was his way of honoring his sister and also keeping her memory fresh and alive for them. We were just talking about 100% of the proceeds for the book go to children in Bali and orphans in Bali that need help. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's amazing.
Thank you.
And it was called the garlic peanut, you said?
The garlic
peanut story.
Yeah.
And is it on Amazon? Because I'm looking it up already.
Well, no, don't go to Amazon. Go to thegarlicpeanutstory.com because he'll see it.
Oh, one word, yeah. You can if you want to go to Amazon, but with Amazon, I cannot sign it. And of course, I will always donate the also the proceeds from Amazon. But if you if you do go to the direct website, thegarlicpeanutstory.com, you get a signed copy, and the orphans get more because Amazon takes a little more for their profits and commission. But whatever your heart.
No! I'd rather have it all go. Bezos doesn't need that much more money.
You know? What she said.
She said it.
She's already getting a lot from me.
I'm sorry.
I look for, I'm like, Amazon. If I don't feel like going somewhere, Amazon. So
I'm so old school that I have never purchased anything online myself. Maybe a restaurant reservation, never. And if we do, it's my husband who's a little addicted. Oh, God, if he hears this, he's a little addicted to ordering online. Like every day there's a delivery. I mean, every day there's a delivery. And in my company as an interior designer, of course, my staff order a lot of stuff online for especially during the pandemic. Mm. I try not to judge, but I have no patience. I'm completely old school. If I could still write with a feather pen, I would. I would still telegram if I can. But
oh
yes,
my goodness. Okay. I'm sorry. We were talking. I wanted to ask. You said Weiwei was adopted into the family, and by the time you were born, she was 10. She was an institution already. That was her.
Right.
Now, in the culture, how many siblings did you have altogether?
So altogether, there are 6 of us. But also, I'm a rainbow baby. I don't know if you know what that means, a rainbow child. Mm-hmm. It's nothing to do with being gay. although I am proudly
That's
gay.
That's true, too.
I am proudly gay. But a rainbow child is a replacement child, a replacement baby. My mom had a stillbirth, which I also discuss in the book. It was so painful, emotionally, physically, and everything during that time. So I never met my sister. If that baby had been alive, so she carried it to term, but the baby already stopped moving 3 days before she was. If that baby had been alive, I wouldn't have been born. And the joke is they wanted to have a girl because it was a girl. Well, they got a big girl right now. It's a replacement right here. So there, I had an oldest brother, the oldest sister, then Weiwei. Mm-hmm. By the way, you pronounce that so well. Then there is another brother, then the sister that never made it, and then me. So technically, there are 6 of us, and there are only 4 of us that's left now.
Are you the baby?
I am. I'm the baby in every way, in every every single way.
Well, I was going to ask in where you were raised, was that like the sisters were, like you said, a second mom? that was just kind of like the daughters in the family, kind of, they helped with the cooking, they helped with the raising.
Culturally, the yes. Kids. Yeah. Yes, culturally, yeah. Yes. Of course, you know, we also had a grandma live with us, a female cousin who became part of the family. It was like, you know, we always did things we call it ramai ramai, which means together. Yeah, we had a little more of the male-female role. But no matter what, I was more drawn to the female of the family. Until now, most of my friends are female. Mm-hmm. I tell people I'm like a feminist trapped in a gay body, if you get what I'm trying to say.
Oh, I got you.
So, yeah. So, culturally, yes, she was just like a mom, but I think, I don't know what it is. I think, you know, I also talk about this in the book. I was called Wewe's son because how clingy, and we were like attached to the hips. Mm-hmm. For many, many, many years until I had to leave the house and go abroad. I mean, I went to, you know, school in Switzerland and in the U.S. But she was, I wouldn't want anybody to wash my hair. There was a story where for a full month, I didn't let anybody wash my hair. And I made my cousin cry because I stuffed her face with my stinky hair. but it was Wewe who broke the spell. And, you know, but anyway, we had a special bond. And I think we still do.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No matter what you believe in, right? That's amazing. And
just to catch up, she is the mom of the sister that had passed away?
Mm-hmm. She is my sister who passed away. And the mm-hmm. book, it's written in a format of letters to her children. They are now 19 and 21.
Yes.
Yeah. When she passed away, they were only 4 and 6. I did not plan to write the book. I was just writing letters to them. But in the end, I think there's a bigger message just my, besides just the memory of my sister and my childhood, because I had a lot of, let's just say my childhood was horrific. I had horrible, horrible, like, I still can't believe that was me. And the fact that I'm still here, it was, I give the credit mostly because of her and her love, her unconditional love and affection to me. Even now, when I'm having a bad day or something terrible happened, I would always hang on to her love and how she used to rub my chest and just make everything feel better and okay. So
yeah,
he still brings you comfort after all these years.
Yes, comfort. And it comes with what did Queen Elizabeth say when Prince Philip passed away? Something about suffering or sadness or pain is the price of love.
Mm-hmm.
And I have that. I still have the pain of missing her for the rest of my life. As long as I am conscious, mm-hmm. I would always miss her and yeah. Sad that she's not with us anymore.
Yeah, I don't want to get too much into it because I want people to read for themselves.
Yes.
That bond is, yeah, the bond is amazing.
Looking at you while you're saying that, I feel it's, I mean, there's a screen between us, but I just feel the emotion and I see it in your eyes. And the first thing I thought about was my grandfather. So I'm glad that Pup kind of broke it up because I'm over here like, don't cry.
Everybody's crying.
But definitely I get what you're saying because with me, I always have to think back at like, wait, what year did he pass away? Because it's like part of me is in denial and I don't want to remember what year it was. And then when I do and I realize how long has passed, I'm like, has it really been that long? It feels like it was like maybe 2-3 years ago. It's really been, I think it'll be 8 years. The hurt is still there.
Right.
It's however, I think I've learned about myself. I can never tell people, other people, what to say or what to do. With me, I try to just honor every emotion, whatever mm-hmm. that might be. Like there are days I don't want to think about it, or there are days I just want to cry every minute of the day. And 15 years later, here I am, you know. But anyway, you know, and even now, I really never know what to tell people. Like it's interesting, my uncle sadly just passed away. Now, this just 2 days ago. Let's not get into
so
it.
And I think
my only uncle from my father's side, and I in our culture, I would be there right now to bury mm-hmm. him. I can't because of the pandemic. I can't even go into my own country without a special visa and the whole thing. Mm-hmm. So anyway, my point is, I try to honor every emotion I have, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I never know what to say to people. And, you know, and we've all gone through this. and I'm trying to be polite, which I can never be. I always just blabber what's in my mind.
Let it go, sis. Let it go.
It drives me nuts when, like, there are times that people just, I know they have good intention, mm-hmm. for with their condolences, but there are times they say things I want to reach out through the phone or just strangle them. It's like, I'm sorry, just stop telling me how to feel. Like, stop. Don't tell me where she is. Do not tell me she's in a better place, because, you know, I was going to say, you know, bitch, because you have no idea how much suffering she had. Like, just freaking stop it. Like, I mean, it's just like.
You straight up said, listen, first of all, you're going to be a slap like, app.
You know, I know you meant to be good, but I mean, you believe that, great, but just don't say it out loud to me, because mm-hmm. I don't believe in, like, oh God. So that's why now I love emojis. I mm-hmm. freaking love emojis, the hieroglyphic of our generation. Mm-hmm. You know, now I just send heart and this prayer. <here's
off. laughs> When you really wanted to say.
Yes.
I can say. They just so easily go, oh, don't cry. And it's like, but what if I want to? Because that'll make me feel better. Leave me alone.
I know.
You don't know her like I knew her.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, now I just, you know, now, like, even having gone through this, I don't know what the right thing to say when people are mourning. Or I try to, we all have good intentions. So I, listen, like I said in the beginning, I'm men. Puzzle. So just mm-hmm. let me be.
That's right. Well, I want to just touch on one quick little subject, and then we're going to talk design. Sure. Did I read correctly that you and your husband knew each other for a week before taking the plunge?
All Wait, right. Okay. Then. So this is before Grindr. This is before mm-hmm. Tinder. This is before swapping left and right. Yes. We forget about a week. Okay, mm-hmm. so we met December 20th, 1993. Our first date was December 26th, 1993, at almost about 7 p.m. Yes, he spent the night, the first night. Yes, I started bringing my toothpaste the next day, toothbrush. And within a week, the U-Haul showed up. And yes, we've lived together ever since, and yes, we still cuddle and we still have it hot 20 mm-hmm. almost 28 years later. Yes. So, and we know how many days in the book you'll discover how many times in almost 28 years that we've been separated physically because of my business trip, as well as he had to drop his grandparents. When they're alive, they're snowbirds, but mm-hmm. not very many. We've only been separate, like, literally only not even 30 days in this span of 28 years physically.
One day a year,
basically. And even so, we don't, like, right now he's in the other room, so we don't wear our we each have a skull necklace.
Ooh.
But we're not together. Like, if I go to work, like, I would have to drive to San Francisco or what have you, stay at home, I wear that necklace, even to grocery, because mm-hmm. in case something happened, we are together. Oh. That's a simple, yeah. That's, we are gaggly romantic. Yes, 28 years.
So, you know, I know this couple and they don't want to do rings. I'm going to suggest that. That's a good, I got to write that down. I like that.
And, any of course, other every, yeah, the ring. Everything is symbolized by, like, he wears the smaller skull and the darker one because that symbolizes me, and I wear the bigger skull and the more blonde looking skull. How's that?
Perfect. It's perfect. So, yeah. Oh my God. So 3 days. Listen, you know, yes. it was something. If you didn't know it was love within 3 days,
we knew it. We didn't exchange ring until 4 years later. I finally said, is this it? Am I it and you're it? I don't want to waste your time and my time and our time.
Yeah, I don't want to be a lawyer.
Exactly. I asked him in front of his parents, and we were both, he was a broke PhD candidate. I didn't make much money, so we just bought the cheapest ring we could find, and we still keep them. And the only time we took this ring off was when we were finally allowed to get married legally. Mm-hmm. We took each other's rings off and we put it back on, in front of the judge. Yeah. So.
What year did you guys get married officially?
When?
Yeah, what year was this that you guys
We just celebrated our 7th anniversary. So it was in 2014. It was at City Hall in San Francisco under the dome where Harvey Milk and Mayor Moscone were murdered. And we did it because we wanted to honor them. And we actually did not believe in marriage.
Oh, really?
Do you want to hear why?
I definitely do.
After 21 years, what changed?
Okay, so we didn't believe in marriage for two reasons. One, marriage used to be the exchange of property between the father of the bride to the husband, the handed off of property. And we don't believe women are properties. Secondly, we didn't want to get married or belong into an institution that didn't invite us. We were not invited and we don't want to be part of that. Mm-hmm. However, we spoke with our attorneys and you know, while we're humble people, we don't have a lot of assets. We have nothing. We give everything we have away. But everybody's all happy and dandy now. But he said that marriage is legally the strongest legal bind between two humans in this country, at least. And everything was fine. But in case something happened to us and we're not legally married, we could not even visit each other in the hospital or make decisions. Mm-hmm. While our family were okay at the time and still are okay, but I have heard nightmare story when somebody's in a coma or some life-threatening or some people or money, people mm-hmm. became crazy. And imagine if Stephen, my husband, and I could not make decisions for each other, we're not even allowed in the hospital. That would break our hearts. So that's the main reason why we want to get married. Secondly, we want to, after all these centuries, us gays, lesbian, whoever we are, who've been marching loud and begging to be allowed to have a equal marriage, if we didn't, I think it would be so ungrateful. And it was our way to honor allies, you know, gay, lesbian in the past, dead or alive, who have fought for our rights. So that's the second reason. And I think more importantly, we have 15 fairy godchildren right now. We're doing this for them, for your children's generation and their children's generation, that this is our way of marching legally. Mm-hmm. This is our way in supporting equality. That's why we got married.
Right. It's a statement as well as a commitment. I love it.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. So we didn't want to get married just because that's what we're supposed to do. We want to have the right reasons to get married.
Let's talk design. One of the reasons I was Danny is because as common as it is for people to work at home, you basically have the same setup. You have a desk or a table, a computer, maybe a telephone, if that's what it is. But different ladies here. Three different ladies.
Yes.
You told me that you wrote the book sitting at the dining room table, right?
Yes, at the time in our different house. We just moved to a new house. Well, not new. It's an old new house. How's that?
Just right. It's new to you. It's new to you. Yes. Well, I'm gonna try not to drop my laptop. But this is literally my workspace, all right? It is my desk, right? I got to take my Mac to be fixed, by the way.
And your computer, yes. I was like, you're laying down on the floor.
Yeah, well, you know, it's comfortable. This is where I sit every day. I've got the two monitors.
Wow, you have so many computer screens. El decor. That was beautiful.
All right.
Well, I'll distract Jonathan while you typically. Okay. For you, as an interior designer, for someone working at home, sitting at a desk, I'm going to put it out there. I'm no expert. Comfortable chair.
Absolutely. And beautiful, please. Mm-hmm. Not just comfortable. It has to be beautiful for me.
That's what I was looking for when I was looking for a chair, because I found a lot of like the clunky, really thick big black chairs. And as you can see, my room is pink and white and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it was just going to clash. So I was like, this is going to be better. Mm-hmm. I'm all tidied up. Can I show you real quick?
Yes.
Please do.
Okay.
Your post-its. I love your bed, by the way. Is that your bed? Miss Monroe, hello. Oh, you like Audrey. I love that you love Audrey. She's one of my ladies.
Is
darling.
Coffee pot. Oh no, I know it is. Well, I'll tell you, I know what that is on her desk. I can tell. That's a teeny tiny refrigerator. I didn't know that that was going to be on the list of required desk items.
It is, because as I clock in, I'm always late. As you can see, today was definitely not planned. I thought she said 7:30, and I was like, I'm only a little bit late. And then I see the meeting thing. I was like, no. So I got this, because I do this as I start my mornings.
Oh, my God. Oh my, you have no idea what I thought it was. Oh,
it's not how I start my mornings.
I mean, oh, good Lord. Oh, my God. I'm like turning red.
You know what's funny? I was just about to show you my mouse pad, but this is what my mouse pad is.
Oh, that's sweet. That's cute. I like your Audrey, by the way.
So what I'm going to show you is my cough drops, because my throat tends to get dry from talking all day, even though I talk a lot anyway. And my lollipops are in an arrangement that a friend gave me as I came out. And then other useless stuff and a picture of my son. Pretty much it's useful and useless things. I could declutter this, but this isn't decluttered. So.
Right.
There is no such thing with me. You know, I always tell people, and I'm not trying to be mean. You know that Marie Kondo girl, lady? Mm-mm. She's the one, she's the Japanese lady who said,
oh, yeah. That
object, if it gives you no pleasure or joy.
Does it bring you joy? Yeah.
Joy or something. I'm like, okay, I'm being catty right now. I always said, I said, say no to Marie Kondo, but fill up your condo.
Wait, is she the minimalist one that helps you like declutter and?
Yes. And I'm glad I'm happy that some people can use her inspiration or her service. Right. I'm the opposite. I am
attacked by such
I'm a hoarder. I'm a hoarder.
And I feel like I'm in between you guys, or between Danny and Marie Kondo, because my desk is not bad. I've got a cup full of pens. I'm addicted to pens.
Oh, mine are in my drawer. So am I.
I don't have a drawer. Okay. Jonathan, you're working from home. What must you have? This is designer to the dark.
Should I call my husband, because he is about to divorce me? Basically, if I walk into one more antique store or one more auction, and you know, so I am a romantic, all right, and I'm a self-proclaimed romantic as a person, as a designer. My office, be it at home, I'm fortunate and blessed. I you know, we used to live in a small place. Now we have enough room for the whole village, most probably. We have our own office. What do I have to have? I'm going to just list them randomly. I have to have at least three different desks. So I have I have my beautiful desk that I like at the office. I have 15, it's 15 feet long, which I display every mood board, every collection I have that gives me like texture, colors, everything, because I'm a designer. Right? Projects that I'm working on. But these are collections from all over the world. I've been collecting for 30 something years. From a little artifact to like a whole bust. I collect so many busts, and I'm obsessed with elephants. So I have over 100 elephants from this big to this big.
Oh my God.
Then I have my computer desk. My computer desk does not touch my beautiful desk. Okay? That's uncouth. It's like, you know, if you're a vegan and something touches bacon, you can eat it. Or like, if you're a Muslim, you can't touch any pork on the plate. I feel the same way about my computer desk touching my beautiful ass. No. Then I have my project desk, meaning this is where I spread different objects or paperworks for my different projects, for my design projects. Mm-hmm. On top of that, I also have my printer desk separately, because it's so... Various desks and chairs. I have my working chair on my computer. I have my drafting or my architect stool that can go up and down. I will take you there, but my husband is there and he would not be happy. And he's very private as a person.
Aww.
And then I have there are two chairs. And on top of that, I have two chairs. I have one chair that's covered. It was Stephen's grandparents' chair that I covered with a fabric that I designed. inspired by late sister, and I name it after her. Her other formal name was Priyati. And then on top of that, I have to have my music. I have to have my candles. And we're talking about, that's another sore subject, because maybe I have between 70 to 80 different candles, various candles that I collect for every different mood, every different season. Different
love
candles.
It.
Yeah, I thought you love said it. 7, and I thought you were going to say 7 to 8, and I was like, that's not bad. But then you said 80, and I realized I didn't hear the 70 part, and I'm like, oh, okay.
And before I start working in my office, I have my OCD, and they say OCD is not an adjective, but with me it is. I have to sit down, and I have to look at every desk, make sure that everything I need are in their place, and they have to be in their place. If somebody moved it in my office, you know, I have my staff would move some stuff, I would know exactly where things don't belong. Mm-hmm. Or we have somebody who helps me clean, because God knows there all these items need to be dusted and things move. I have to put things in their order. So I'm going to give you just a little peek of this, a work in progress. We are currently in the master bedroom that's not done. It's still under construction, but you could see my future nightstand. Mm-hmm. And my future nightstand is maybe only 1/20th or 1/30th of what my office or desk look like. Here we go. This is just a preview, okay?
That's not horrible.
No. This is only my nightstand. But think about 15 feet of this. All this object means something.
Gorgeous, though.
I was going to ask if, you know, each thing had a meaning, because it looks like they're there for a reason.
Yes, object has intention and meaning in my life. So I mean, good Lord, I have things that remind me of my parents. I have things that remind me of my childhood. I have things that remind me of my time with Steven somewhere in the world. So I'm an emotional collector. And as a designer, I have to have all those things, because you know what? They inspire me every angle I look. You know, sometimes I say, oh my God, this green is just a perfect green for this project. Or I look at it, and I would just take a pause and say, oh my gosh, remember that time when we were in Paris the first time, you and I were so broke, we stayed in this such and such, you know. Or, you know, my parents can no longer be with us, meaning they can't travel here, they're really old. And my mom fell down and she's on a walker. So next to our bedroom, we have a fire pit and we have the most amazing view of sunset and Pacific Ocean. And I have this king and queen planters, like life-size, mm-hmm. King and queen standing by my bedroom, because I feel like my parents are with, they're still alive, but they can't come here. So as you see, so that's how I work. Even my notepads have to be beautiful. Things have to feel visually enticing, smells good. I'm sure you know by now, I'm intense.
No, I didn't get that at all.
It's a blessing to me, or a curse, but I need my senses to be constantly fed.
I can relate to that so much.
Yeah. The sense of smell is so important. Mm-hmm. If somebody smokes in the morning outside and I could smell it, I would slam the door. I mean, now we live enough distance from any neighbor, in our beautiful front and backyard. But before, when we live in urban setting, if I open my window and I smell somebody's, smell cigarettes, my God, I instantly get so moody and bitchy, literally bitchy. And I'm proud of that. sense of smell, even if my husband put on AC/DC or a Black Sabbath, I would just close the door, because, you know, that's his music. I tell him that's the ANSI music. It just makes me so anxious. Can't listen to them while I'm working. So I have to put on my music.
That's my mom with my uncle. My uncle owns a taco truck, and both him and my mom run it. Yes.
Yum. So
same thing. She's like, oh my goodness. And then your uncle starts putting the music, and I have to talk extra loud to the customers because I can't hear them and concentrate. And she says it blocks her. So she has to put some type of music that she can hear to concentrate also, because she's like, oh, here's the guitar and the screaming. And I'm like, oh, and she's like, yeah, something else.
Depending on what I'm working on, depending on if it's a modern project versus a beach house or a penthouse or like a mansion or a palace. Yes, I'm designing a palace right now. I have to have music. Yeah,
different Jonathan, back up.
First of all, I can never tell you where it is, but let me just say it is a royalty palace that belongs to a royal family. And it is, as you know, not in the US, there is no such thing of a palace. I mean, figuratively speaking, maybe, but it's in Europe. That's all I can tell you. This palace was built from the 16th to the 18th century, and it's about 120,000 square feet.
Jesus, Mary and Joseph. That's huge.
It's a long haul project, and the joke is honestly, I hope I will be alive when it's done.
Stop.
So depending on my projects, so I do all kinds, you know, the modern kind, the traditional, the somewhat transitional, somewhere in between. Yeah, we have a winery / vineyard project. We have a chateau. We have the palace. We have a private complex villas, like a compound in Bali. But we also have a one bedroom apartment that we're working on. I mean, I don't discriminate sizes or amount of money. For me, it's about, do they appreciate my style and vice versa? You know, in design, there's a certain language. And I'm not talking about French or Japanese or but there are certain, in design, just like in any art or type of expression, you have to appreciate each other and my style and their style and how we work together. So
that is,
God, that's fantastic.
Yes. I do have a question before I forget or run out of time to ask. I've been staring at the wallpaper behind you almost the entire time. It's like I try to look at you, but I'm also looking back to like, that is just so, it's intricate, so, beautiful, and I want to know what the meaning is.
Okay. So the wallpaper is produced by maybe the best wallpaper in the world. It is hand painted. It's custom. The company is called De Gournay. They're based in London, but they have showroom all over the world. They did, oh God, I mean, from, you know, your typical clients to Kensington Palace and Kate Moss, lots of brand names that use, I believe Cartier is one of them. But anyway, it doesn't matter. They do a lot of amazing projects. But this specifically, I design it. It's based on my parents' love for each other. And I call it the eternities too short, eternities not long enough, and the inseparable couple. So there is a wooden antique statue that's typically given newlywed. And my parents, they will be 88, and they've been married for 64 years, and they still hold hands. Aww. And they are like our role model, and my dad still carries my mom's purse. So if you can't see it right, but on the floor, like close to the floor, if I just tilt it without slamming this phone, right there underneath there, I turned my mom and dad into monkeys because there is a place in Bali called the Monkey Forest. That's where you can visit wild monkeys, literally, and they're called the Holy Monkey Forest. And I turned them into monkeys. So in one corner, my mom is holding me as a child. I put a sarong around them just to be decent. But is customized hand paint. Every stroke is hand painted. And it takes at least at 4 to 6 months to make this. And they cost a fortune.
Oh, wow.
Per panel, typically they cost roughly about $3,000 to $10,000, depending on how complicated. Some are hand embroidered. I did not purchase this. I actually did it for a show for them. And then later on, it was for like a fashion photo shoot in Germany for a fashion magazine. So everything is based on, there's a story behind it. So it's a scenery in Bali that's based on and my mom and dad's love for each other. So when they knew I got this home that we just moved recently for 3 months ago, they send this as a gift, as a housewarming gift. So I put it up, but it's super precious. And I'm just going to try to get closer right here. I don't know if you could see.
Oh my God.
Look at this. You see, and do you see my mom and me down below or not really?
Oh
That's your mom.
That's my mom holding me. Yeah.
Oh my god.
I don't want to show you all the mess because this room is still on construction.
No, you're fine. You're fine.
Clothes piling all over. But yeah.
Not bad.
You should go to my website, jonathanbrackman.com, R-A-C-H-M-A-N. You'll see various wallpaper that I use from the same company, the Gurney. Some of them are actually silk, hand-painted and hand-embroidered. It's insane.
Oh, wow. All right. Well, we got to say goodbye to Danny. We're going to say goodbye to Danny.
Thank you so much for joining us. It's nice to meet you. And you can always find me on Instagram, Jonathan Rackman Design on Instagram. And you can DM me. I'm what you see is what you get, as not normal. I hope I'm not normal.
Did you just say you were normal?
I said, right. No, I'm that's what I'm not a normal person.
I think
normal.
It's more so, let's say you're relatable.
What you see is what you get. Thank you. That's
exactly. It's relatable, not normal.
That's a compliment.
Normal's kind of boring.
No, I'm not
you're
normal.
Anything
no,
but
that would
normal.
Be an, that would be a lying, and that would be an insult.
Right.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much.
Bye, Danny.
It's been a pleasure. I will be DMing you, so.
Okay, DM me anytime, and I will always reply.
So, Jonathan, not bad for a kid who was arranging flowers not that long ago, huh?
Thank you. You did read the book, and I guess you read everything. I know, that is so sweet. It's one of my favorite hashtags is my unplanned life. I never planned this life.
No, and if people read the book, don't know why. No.
Yeah.
You're still humble. You're still, as Danny said, you're still relatable.
Thank you. There's no other reason not to be.
You're sweet. Yeah. Just because you're successful doesn't mean that you have to be an asshole.
No,
right?
No. But now and then my bitchy side came on, you know. we're all human, and I'm aware when I'm not being kind or I'm being bitchy, or sometimes I might be an asshole. I hope I don't do that too often, but when I do, I will step back and I will take inventory of myself. And if I've made any mistake or I have hurt anyone, I would be the first to say, I'm so sorry.
Right. And if you, for some reason, missed it, your husband would catch you.
Oh, God. That's why I love him. He grounds me. He is so humble. He's super sweet. He is he's what we call salt of the earth. Aww. He's a good Midwestern. I call him my corn-fed Iowan. He's from Iowa.
I love that. Well, you guys, make sure you go to thegarlicpeanutstory.com and get your book by Jonathan Rackman. It's a beautiful book. It's a thick girl too. It's not skinny. She is not on a diet. That is a
nope. Had so much garlic peanuts.
She's hefty. And you said jonathanrackman.com and
yes.
On Insta, it's Jonathan Rackman Design.
Yeah.
And just follow his progress as he hangs out with royalty and rubs elbows and, palaces and stuff.
Well, you know what? I am a queen after all. So.
You know what? I will send you a tiara. It'll be from the Dollar Tree, but it's going to be a tiara.
Thank you. I would wear it. Oh, you are so funny. Well, you're so sweet. Thank you so much.
Jonathan, I love you. And please.
And I love you. All my life has been touched and lifted and surrounded by amazing, loving women like yourself. So I feel so honored and blessed.
Well, thank you.
I lost an amazing dear sister 15 years ago, but every day, every single day, I see her in every woman who has supported me, believed in me, loved me, lifted me the way you have. So thank you so, so much.
Oh my God. You're the best.
Thank you.
Bye, baby.
Bye-bye.
Thank you guys so much for listening. If you'd like to purchase Jonathan's book, please head over to thegarlicpeanutstory.com, where 100% of the profits go to charity. Also, follow him on Instagram, Jonathan Rackman Design, to see the gorgeous work he does. Heck, follow me on Instagram as well, Pup Duffy 4CCC Podcasts. That's Pup Duffy, the number 4CCC Podcast. Thank you so much to ThoroughClean for sponsoring this episode. You can find them on Facebook or call 321-729-8198 to schedule an appointment. Be sure to follow and support my partners over at beunique.org as well. That's BUNEKE.org. Thanks, guys. Love you all.